This is Teresa Trent, and you are listening to Books to the Ceiling, a podcast that features excerpts from new mysteries coming on to the market. Well, this week we're headed to a cabin in the woods, a basic place, nothing fancy and plenty of privacy, which is good, until a mysterious stranger comes to the door in the middle of the night. Here is a little more about the novel, Muzzle the Black Dog by Mike Cobb. After a mysterious stranger appears at his isolated cabin door, Jack's life is forever changed. The stranger's cryptic message sets off a chain of events that lead Jack on a harrowing journey to uncover the true meaning of his own existence. As a series of unexplained fires threaten to consume everything he holds dear, Jack is forced to confront his deepest fears and question everything he thought he knew about himself. Set in the aftermath of the Centennial Olympic Park bombing, Jack's search for the truth takes him to the edge of sanity and puts him on a collision course with a dark and powerful force that has been lurking in the shadows. Join Jack on a gripping and thought-provoking quest for answers in this thrilling and suspenseful tale of self-discovery and redemption. Now here is an excerpt from Muzzle the Black Dog. Chapter 1. Outlander. He didn't show up at my door that night out of thin air. Well, I guess technically he did. But somebody or something had to have sent him. Otherwise, how would he have ended up 11 miles, 11.3 to be exact, from anything resembling civilization? I was awakened from a light doze by dogs barking in the distance. Free rangers. At first, I thought nothing of it. Probably cornered a bobcat, maybe a fox, or baying at a barn owl snaring its quarry. It wasn't until I heard heavy footsteps that I knew I had a drop-in. But I hardly ever have drop-ins. It was almost midnight. What the hell? I peered around the muslin curtain, my passing facsimile of Desert Storm camouflage. A stranger stood at the door, shifting his weight from foot to foot. He saw me. We locked eyes. The low-lying fog that had settled in a couple of hours earlier gave him a wraith-like mien. I could make out enough to tell he had dark, scraggly hair, not too long, but cutting a mop head silhouette against the light from the waxing moon. Disheveled beard graying around the temples and chin. I could have sworn I was witnessing an older Eric Rudolph in the flesh. But they caught him, right? Damn, that was 7 months ago. Time flies. His brother, maybe? No, it couldn't be. The man at my door had two hands. I know because he held a canvas sack in one and a gnarly walking stick in the other. And I had read in the Cherokee Scout that Rudolph's brother had cut off his left hand with a radial arm saw. But wait, didn't the article say the doctors reattached it? Could it be? What do you want? I yelled through the locked door.
I'm here to help you.
Help me? I don't need help, okay?
Well, perhaps you can help me then.
With what?
Let me in, please.
I don't know you.
You don't think you know me, but you do.
How? From where?
You're Jack, right? Jack Pate.
Who are you?
Let's say I'm a friend you didn't know you had. Let me in, man. It's cold as the dickens out here.
Why should I let a perfect stranger into my house?
Because I'm not a stranger. I told you. I'm a friend you didn't know you had.
I pondered whether to let the outlander in. My inclination was to turn him away, to tell him to move the hell on, but my interest was piqued. He knew my name. But how? He had sought me out. But to what end? I decided, against my better judgment and maybe to my detriment, to let him in, albeit with an abundance of caution. I grabbed my Stoger side by side. I freed the deadbolt ever so gently so he wouldn't hear. I walked across the room and stood halfway between the hearth and the door, feet shoulder width and planted firmly on the floor. I leveled the gun where I reckoned his heart would be. dead center, bullseye. "Come in. It's unlocked." The door eased a crack. Now a bluster of winter chill jostled its way into the room, blowing the door open so hard it double-backed and slammed against the cabin wall. As soon as he saw me, he dropped the sack and stick. His arms shot into the air. "Don't shoot, man. I'm not here to hurt you." His eyes were hollow, dark caverns. His gaze was cut glass. He looked even more spectral with the fog behind him and the cabin's dim light washing over him. I nodded toward the center of the room. "Bring your shit in with you." He picked up the sack and stick and limped across the threshold. A waft of funk followed him. He set his sack beside the door. He leaned a stick against the door casing. "Shut the door," I said. "I let you in, okay? Now tell me how you know my name." "Can I have a seat first? I've been on the road a long time and my feet are killing me." I lowered the stoker, but kept a grip on it. I pointed toward the straight-backed chair near the corner, the one with the frayed cane seat. "Sit there, but take off your coat first. Hang it on the rack by the door, on the free peg, okay?" He slipped his arms out of his coat. He hung it where I had told him to. I walked over to the coat. It was a Beretta Gunner Field jacket, dry waxed with a rich hunter brown patina, the kind you can't buy at just any store. There was a 1-inch rip near the shoulder. The cut looked fresh, with clean edges. I ran my left hand through each pocket, careful to train the stoker on my interloper. In the jacket's right pocket, I found a half-full, crushed-in, non-filter soft pack of Camels and a Strike Anywhere matchbook with City Lock Service, Murphy, North Carolina, on the front. "Stand up," I said, hands in the air. I approached him. I held the stoker tightly in my right hand. With my free one, I patted down his right side, the inseam of his left leg. I switched hands. Lather, rinse, repeat. "Sit back down." I sat in the chair facing him with my back to the hearth. The light and the shadow from the flickering fire danced on his whiskered face. If I had to guess, I'd say he hadn't seen a shower in 3 weeks or more. "Do you know who you look like?" I said. "You look just like Eric Rudolph. If I didn't know better, I'd swear that's who you are. Okay?" He frowned. "Who is that?" "Eric Rudolph? Where the hell have you been, man? You don't know who Eric Rudolph is? The Olympic Park bomber?" "Of course. I recognize the name now. I'm not a news hound. Besides, I try not to remember things that don't matter. Selective recall." His eyes darted to the ceiling. "And that Eric Rudolph fellow means nothing to me." "Now that you're sitting down, will you tell me how you know me?" "Did I say I knew you? I said you know me." "But you knew my name, right?" "You have me there, Jack Pate. I know your name." "Okay then, so how do I know you?" "Are you seeking affirmation? Are you trying to control me? Or are you just concerned?" "What?" "What's with the verbal tick?" I frown. "Verbal tick? Okay, right? Dependent personality disorder, if you ask me." "What are you talking about?" "I'm no shrink, but if one were sitting here beside me, he'd tell you that when a gent says things like okay and right over and over as a question, it usually means he needs validation, reassurance, to be taken care of, not to be abandoned." "Do you think that's me?" I wasn't through, especially by somebody they love. But other people do it to control their interlocutor, a backhanded way of saying, "Of course I'm right." Tricky, don't you think? Or maybe yours is involuntary. Tourette's light, if you will. He leveled his cut-glass gaze on me. "Which is it for you, Jack Pate?" Before I could respond, he continued. "If you ask me, in your case, I think you're trying to control me. Fixed gaze, stiff face. Where the hell have you been, man?" Dead giveaways. "Then again, maybe you just want to be my friend and you don't know how to show it." He paused. "Okay." An ear-to-ear grin formed, exposing a bright gold crown on number 5. "That was for you, Jack Pate." Do you think, just maybe, that my fixed gaze and stiff face are because I'm sitting here at a 1:45 across the room from a drifter who happened to waltz in uninvited and crash my one-man band? Perhaps, Jack Pate, but please don't call me a drifter. I prefer errant knight. May I impose upon you for a jet black cup of joe, a morsel, a donut, anything? You don't need to keep saying my name. I get it. You know who I am. I just like the sound of it, that's all. It has bisyllabic crispness to it, if you know what I mean. Okay? There was that grin again. See, there I go. You're rubbing off on me. I caught something out of the corner of his eye. I blinked and stared in its direction. A wisp scampered along the baseboard opposite where we sat. It disappeared as quickly as it had arrived. Was it a field mouse? A shrew? Or just a shadow from the fire? I turned my attention back to the man sitting across from me. Did you see that?
What?
Never mind. When was the last time you ate?
Been a while. 2.5 days. A veritable feast. Lettuce wilted, bib. Yogurt, vanilla, low-fat Dannon, as I recall.
Peanuts, honey roasted. And some boar's head deli ham, a week past the stale date. Not what you'd call Epicurean, but it got me by, retrieved straight from a dumpster behind the Murphy Save-A-Lot. Are you shitting me? That's where they caught Rudolph.
Why would I, as you say, shit you?
Murphy's 23 miles away. How did you get here?
With this thing right here.
He wagged his right thumb. Man in a ranger picked me up just outside of Murphy. I told him I was headed to a cabin in the woods due north of Marble. He brought me as far as he could till the gravel road turned to washboard. Then he dropped me off. Said,
"Sorry, friend. Can't go no further. You just go on ahead."
That's what he said.
Can't go no further. Just go ahead on.
I walked the rest of the way. He must not have put you out because of the washboard, right? A ranger could have gotten here with no problem at all.
Nope, it wasn't that. He just didn't want to go no further out of his way.
My visitor smirked. How did you know where to find me? And why did you want to find me in the first place?
Wasn't easy. Would you be so kind as to hand me my jacket?
I crossed the room and took the Beretta gunner off the peg. He reached into the right pocket and retrieved the Camels and matches. He held the pack out.
Care for smoke?
I told him I don't smoke. And if he even thought of firing one up in my cabin, he could gather his things and be on his way. He put on his jacket.
I'm not leaving, I promise.
He headed outside. 5 minutes later, he returned. He placed his jacket back on the peg. He picked a fleck of tobacco off his lip and reached for his sack by the door. Give it here, I said. Don't even think of reaching inside. If you do, I'll
fill me with buckshot.
Maybe. He extended the sack to me. I grabbed it and placed it on my lap. As he stood before me, I groped through the contents with my left hand, looking for a handgun, a knife, a box cutter, an ice pick. Anything he could do me in with. Out here in the middle of nowhere, who would ever know? I handed the sack back to him. He sat down, reached into it, and pulled out a map. It was one of those old Texaco accordion folds you used to get free at the filling station, with a 5-point star on the front, and the smiling man in the gray-green attendant cap, beaming and baring his pearly whites. Not like the Texaco man I remember. Nicotinian would be more fitting. He unfolded the map and held it up with his right hand, pointed to a big red magic marker X. Where my cabin is. Close enough, anyway. Jabbed it with his left finger.
Here, right here, see? I knew where you were. When I got close, I saw smoke rising to the firmament. I knew it had to be you.
I stared at his left arm, trying to get a bead on his wrist, but it was covered by his sleeve. When he saw me staring, he jerked his hand away. And why? I said.
Why what?
Why did you want to find me? The solitary light bulb hanging from the center rafter swayed ever so slightly, like a Foucault pendulum. He looked up at it, then back at me. His thoughts halted at his lips.
In time, my friend, in time.
My frustration must have been center stage because he looked up at me and, For the briefest moment, I saw in his eyes a blue devil sadness, a despair, an odd affinity.
"I really am your friend," he said.
I threw another log onto the fire with one hand, never letting go of the stoker with the other. I scooped up a generous helping of 8 o'clock into the percolator basket, threw a pot of leftover Dinty Moore on the burner, grabbed what remained of a loaf of week-old New York rye from the marble Big D. I pondered my visiting sphinx as he tore half-inch bits of bread from the loaf, dipped them into the stew with his fingertips, and placed them between his lips, savoring them as if they were the finest delicacies. There was something about the way he ate, the way he sat there, elfin-like in self-absorbed delight, relishing passable coffee, week-old bread, and canned stew. I found it downright queerish. Slowly, the hollowed caverns became black holes yearning to be plumbed. Cut glass became Brazilian blue tourmaline pools. A smile crept up his face. His brow furrows dissipated. The funk settled in. Back when I was a kid, a down-at-the-heels man showed up at our door on Saturday afternoon, claiming to sell world book encyclopedias. My father turned him away without so much as a no thanks, saying, "We don't need no damned encyclopedia. That's what libraries are for. Now get on." Later that day, when my father was on our roof blowing leaves, he fell off and suffered a compression fracture. He had to wear a back brace for 3 months and went on short-term disability. Somebody once said, "Karma's a bitch." My father never understood that. It's true that I had just pulled a gun on my visitor, but I had let him in after all, even though he showed up past midnight, not the middle of the day, and now I was heating up food for a man I didn't know from Adam. If bad karma was going to come my way, it had plenty of other opportunities to get in. I leaned the stoker against the hearth, but within easy reach. "You know, another man dropped by here unannounced once," I said, "looking for Rudolph. I almost plugged him with buckshot, too. Come to find out, he wasn't official, just a local looking to get fat on a bounty. Once he realized I wasn't harboring a fugitive, he split."
"Thank you for not plugging me."
"You're welcome. More Joe?"
"Please."
He held out his cup.
"I'm not looking to get rich. I've had my share of fortune, in my day, as they say. But somewhere along the way, I realized it wasn't working for me."
"Where are you from?"
"Same as you."
"Same as me?"
"Yes, same as you."
"And where might that be?" He leveled his eyes, not at mine, but at my balding crest, as if he were looking beyond me to some place far away.
"Why, Villa Rica, of course."
"You said you didn't know me, right? But you know my name. You know where I'm from."
"So I'm correct," he said. "You are from Villa Rica."
"I never saw you there. But then I've been gone for almost 5 years.
"Well, I'm originally from Waco, the Georgia Waco, due west of there. 15 miles, give or take."
"I know where it is," I said.
"I move around a lot now, up and down 78 mainly. Eschew the interstate for obvious reasons. They don't take kindly to waggish thumbs on the eyes."
"You mean wagging?"
"No, I mean waggish, puckish. That's me, they say. Recklessly playful. Ironic, in a way."
"Ironic?"
"Yes. Have you ever seen a recklessly playful loner? A man of the road who spends, I don't know, maybe 2/3 of his time by himself? Most loners aren't waggish."
I thought about how I could get him to open up, given that he somehow knew me. Maybe he knew my family. Having just met the man, I normally wouldn't have confided personal details. He had shared little with me, but I needed to find out how much he knew. "The wife and kids still live in Villa Rica." I studied his face. The man's gaze moved from my forehead to my eyes.
"We haven't even officially met."
He rose to a half stoop, leaned in, extended his hand.
"Yardley Bennett."
I returned the favor. "You know my name already."
"Nice to meet you formally, Jack Pate."
"Are you going to tell me how I know you?"
"Let's just say you walked in my regions a time or two. We'll leave it at that for now."
I looked down at his feet, at his leather woodlands scratched and scuffed. "But if, as you say, you don't know me,
How do you know I've walked in your regions?
You'll figure it out in time. I can tell already you're a reasonably intelligent fellow.
So how did you become a drifter? Sorry, an errant knight.
Had a wife. Owned a Chrysler dealership. Well, co-owned. In Carrollton, Bankhead Highway, Miracle Mile for rednecks. Sold out to my partner right before the divorce. I tried to make it work.
The business?
No, the marriage. Damned hard I tried. Finally, after 12 years, I left. She took me to the cleaners. But that's okay. I have enough to live on.
So where'd you go?
I hit the road on a Schwinn American, metallic blue with handlebar streamers.
He looked wistfully to the ceiling.
Pedaled off into the sunset, just like the drifter.
He lowered his head and stared through me.
You did call me a drifter, didn't you?
I nodded.
I left behind a lot, he continued, but I never looked back. As soon as the ink was dry on the papers, the ex moved with the little ones to Greer, just outside of Greenville.
Little ones?
Boy and a girl.
He placed his index fingers to his lips as if in pensive thought.
Let's see. The boy's 15 now.
Girl's 12.
Wait, what's today?
The 3rd of January.
13.
Why Greer?
Her sister has a beauty shop there. She, the ex, that is, married a man I call the Five Forks 49er, although I've never met him.
The what?
49er. Gold digger. Get it?
Not to pry, but
pry away. I'm an open book. But mind you, I'm a stickler for the rubric. I won't let you skim through the pages to get to the good part. You were saying?
How do you get by on the road? I understand the save-a-lot part, but you don't seem the dumpster-diving type.
As I said, I lost a lot in the split-up, but I still have enough. I'm sure you could tell I'm not a big spender, but I don't always dive. Sometimes I dine.
Dry-waxed Beretta gunners aren't cheap.
You got me there, Jack Pate.
So, you were telling me what it's like being on the road.
Is that what I was doing?
I thought so.
On the one hand, I can't say I rue having left. I've met a lot of nice people, good, solid as they come stock. Hell, I met you, didn't I? But wherever I land, I'm always the stranger. Somehow, I guess, being the outsider was my lot. Always outside, looking in,
or standing at another man's door. On the other hand, his left hand shot to his side.
What do you mean, on the other hand?
You said on the one hand, what about the other hand?
As I told you, I left a lot behind. Mainly I miss my kids, but surely you know what that's like. You said you had kids. How many?
I couldn't begin to express how much I missed my own children. How hard it had been to leave them, but I had no choice. It had to have been hell for them and for Barbara whenever the holly-go-lightly mean Reds came upon me.
One of each, just like you.
By the time I got around to looking at the clock, it was 2:15. Listen, I said, do you want to stay the night? I was as surprised by my words as he must have been. I never would have asked him to stay, but I had gotten only a few pages into the book. I suspected the good part, the important part, would take me a while. How could I let him leave with the riddle hanging over me, without knowing how he knew me and why he was even here? If he left, I might never find out.
You'd let me stay here, a perfect stranger, as you claim?
It's not an offer I make lightly, but it's late, and it's cold out. Where would you go if you left at this hour? And besides, there's still a lot you haven't told me.
You got me again, Jack Pate.
I can put a blanket on the floor and add a log or two. I'll even give you a little plonk before you turn in.
Plonk?
Cheap Carolina Muscat. Yadkin Valley.
And that was an excerpt from Muzzle the Black Dog. Muzzle the Black Dog is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop.org, and Goodreads. Now here's a little more about our author. Mike's body of literary work includes both fiction and nonfiction, short form and long form, as well as articles and blogs. He is the author of 3 published novels, Dead Beckoning, The Devil You Knew, Its sequel, You Will Know Me by My Deeds, and Muzzle the Black Dog, a novella. He is also working on Kathleen, a fictionalized account of a cold case murder from 1970. While he is comfortable playing across a broad range of topics, much of his focus is on true crime, crime fiction, and historical fiction. Rigorous research is foundational to his writing. He gets that honestly, having spent much of his professional career as a scientist. A native of Atlanta, Mike splits his time between Midtown Atlanta and Blue Ridge, Georgia. And you can catch up with him on the internet at MikeCobbWriter.com. That's all we have this week on Books to the Ceiling. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to rate, review, follow, or share with friends who enjoy mysteries. Books to the Ceiling is a part of my author blog at teresatrent.blog, where you can find an archive of all the podcasts. And don't forget to check out the giveaway page for your chance at winning gift cards and ebooks. Thank you so much for stopping by, and I hope to see you again next week with a new mystery on Books to the Ceiling.